She bent to kiss me, then sat in my lap.
Aren't you going to look?
I am looking. Her torn bodice had fallen again.
Not there. Cover that with your hand, and then you can look at the note.
I did as she told me, but left the note where it was. It's really too much, as I said a moment ago. The mysterious Septentrion and his challenge, then Hildegrin, and now this. Have I mentioned the Chatelaine Thecla to you?
More than once, while we were walking.
I loved her. She read a great deal. There was really nothing for her to do when I was gone but read and sew and sleep. And when I was with her, we used to laugh at the plots of some of the stories. This sort of thing was always happening to the people in them, and they were incessantly involved in high and melodramatic affairs for which they had no qualifications. Aja laughed with me and kissed me again, a lingering kiss. When our lips parted, she said,
"What's this about Hildegrin? He seemed ordinary enough."
I took another pastry, touched the note with it, then put a corner into her mouth. "Some time ago, I saved the life of a man called Vodalus." Aja pulled away from me, spewing crumbs.
"Vodalus? You're joking."
"Not at all. That's what his friend called him. I was still hardly more than a boy, but I held back the haft of an axe for a moment. The blow would have killed him. And he gave me a chrysos."
"Wait. What has this to do with Hildegrin?"
"When I first saw Vodalus, he had a man and a woman with him. Enemies came upon them, and Vodalus remained behind to fight, while the other man took the woman to safety. I had decided it was wiser to say nothing about the corpse, or my killing of the axeman."
"I'd have fought myself. Then there'd have been three fighters instead of one. Go on."
"Hildegrin was the man with Vodalus, that's all. If we had met him first, I would have had some idea, or thought I had some idea, of why a Hipparch of the Septentrion Guard would want to fight me. And for that matter, why someone has chosen to send me some sort of furtive message. You know, all the things that Chatelaine Thecla and I used to laugh about, spies and intrigue, masked trysts, lost heirs." "What's the matter, Aja?"
"Do I revolt you? Am I so ugly?"
"You're beautiful. But you look as if you're about to be sick. I think you drank too fast."
"Here."
A quick twist took Aja out of her pavanine gown. It lay about her brown, dusty feet like a heap of precious stones. I had seen her naked in the Cathedral of the Pelerines, but now, whether because of the wine I had drunk or the wine she had drunk, because the light was dimmer now or brighter, or only because she had been frightened and shamed then, covering her breasts and hiding her womanhood between her thighs, she drew me far more. I felt stupid with desire, thick-headed and thick-tongued, as I pressed her warmth against my own cold flesh.
"Severian, wait. I'm not a strumpet, whatever you may think. But there's a price."
"What?"
"You must promise me you won't read that note. Throw it into the brazier."
I let go of her and stepped back. Tears appeared in her eyes, rising as springs do among rocks.
"I wish you could see the way you're looking at me now, Severian. No, I don't know what it says. It's just that... Have you never heard of some women having supernatural knowledge, premonitions, knowing things they could not possibly have learned?"
The longing I had felt was nearly gone. I was frightened as well as angry, though I did not know why. I said, "We have a guild of such women, our sisters in the Citadel. Neither their faces nor their bodies are like yours."
"I know I'm not like that. But that's why you must do what I advise. I've never in my life had a premonition of any strength, and I have one now. Don't you see that must mean it's something so true and so important to you that you can't and mustn't ignore it? Burn the note."
"Someone is trying to warn me, and you don't want me to see it. I asked you if the Septentrion was your lover. You told me he was not, and I believed you." She started to speak, but I silenced her. "I believe you still. Your voice had truth in it. Yet you are laboring to betray me in some way. Tell me now that isn't so. Tell me you are acting in my best interests and nothing beyond."
"Severian..."
"Tell me."
"Severian, we met this morning. I hardly knew you and you hardly know me. What can you expect and what would you expect if you had not just left the shelter of your guild? I've tried to help you from time to time. I'm trying to help you now."
"Put on your dress." I took the note from under the tray. She rushed at me, but it was not difficult to hold her off with one hand. The note had been penned with a crow quill in a straggling scrawl. In the dim light, I could decipher only a few words.
I could have distracted you and thrown it into the fire. That's what I ought to have done. Severian, let me go.
Be quiet.
I had a knife only last week. A misericord with an ivy root handle. We were hungry and Aegilus put it in pawn. If I had it still, I could stab you now.
It would be in your gown, and your gown is over there on the floor. I gave her a push that sent her staggering backward. There was wine enough in her stomach that it was not entirely from the violence of my motion. Into the canvas chair and carried the note to a spot where the last light of the sun penetrated the crowding leaves. The woman with you has been here before. Do not trust her. Trudeau says the man is a torturer. You are my mother. Come again. Chapter 26. Senate. I had just had time to absorb the words when Aegia jumped from her chair, snatched the note from my hand, and threw it over the edge of the platform. For a moment she stood before me, looking from my face to Terminus Est, which by this time leaned, reassembled, against an arm of the couch. I think she feared I was going to strike off her head and throw it after the note. When I did nothing, she said, "Did you read it? Severian, say you didn't."
"I read it, but I don't understand it."
"Then don't think about it.
Be calm for a moment. It wasn't even meant for me."
"It may have been for you, but if it was, why was it put where no one but I could see it?"
"Aegir, have you had a child? How old are you?"
23. "That's plenty old enough, but no, I haven't. I'll let you look at my belly if you don't believe me."
I tried to make a mental calculation and discovered I did not know enough about the maturation of women. "When did you menstruate first?"
13. "If I'd got pregnant, I would have been 14 when the baby came. Is that what you're trying to find out?"
"Yes. And the child would be 9 now. If it were bright, it might be able to write a note like that. Do you want me to tell you what it said?"
"No."
"How old would you say Dorcas is? 18? 19? Perhaps?"
"You shouldn't think about it, Severian, whatever it was."
"I won't play games with you now. You're a woman. How old?" Aegia pursed her full lips.
"I'd say your drab little mystery is 16 or 17. Hardly more than a child."
"Sometimes, as I suppose everyone has noticed, talking of absent persons seems to summon them up like eidolons. So it was now. A panel of the screen swung back and Dorcas came out, no longer the muddy creature we had become accustomed to, but a round-breasted, slender girl of singular grace. I have seen skin whiter than hers, but that was not a healthy whiteness. Dorcas seemed to glow. Freed of filth, her hair was pale gold. Her eyes were as they had always been, the deep blue of the world river Uruburus in my dream. When she saw that Aegia was naked, she tried to return to the shelter of the screen, but the thick body of the scullion prevented her. Aegia said, 'I had better put my rags on again before your pet faints.' Dorcas murmured, 'I won't look.' 'I don't care if you do,' Aegia told her, but I noticed she turned her back to us while she put on her gown. Speaking to the wall of leaves, she added, 'Now we really must go, Severian. The trumpet will sound at any moment.'
'And what will that mean?'
'You don't know.'
She swung about to face us.
'When the machinations of the city wall appear to touch the edge of the solar disk, a trumpet, the first, is sounded on the sanguinary field. Some think it's only to regulate the combats there, though that's not so. It is a signal to the guards inside the wall to close the gates. It's also the signal to begin the fighting, and if you're there when it blows, that's when your contest will start. When the sun is below the horizon and true night comes, a trumpeter on the wall sounds tattoo. That means the gates will not be opened again, even for those who carry special passes, and also that anyone who, having given or received the challenge, has not yet come to the field, is assumed to have refused satisfaction. He can be assaulted wherever he is found, and an armiger or an exultant can engage assassins without soiling his honor.'
The scullion, who had been standing by the stair, listening to all this and nodding, moved aside for her master, the innkeeper.
'Sir,' he said, 'if you indeed have a mortal appointing, I—'
'That is just what my friend was saying,' I told him. 'We must go.' Dorcas asked then if she might have some wine. Somewhat surprised, I nodded. The innkeeper poured her a glass, which she held in both hands like a child. I asked him if he supplied writing implements for his guests.
You wish to make a testament, sir? Come with me. We have a bower reserved for that purpose. There's no charge, and if you like, I will engage a boy who will carry the document to your executor.
I picked up Terminus Est and followed him, leaving Aja and Dorcas to keep watch on the Avern. The bower our host boasted of was perched on a small limb and hardly big enough to hold a desk, but there was a stool there, several crow quill pins, paper, and a pot of ink. I sat down and wrote out the words of the note. So far as I could judge, the paper was the same as that on which it had been written, and the ink gave the same faded black line. When I had sanded my scribble, folded it, and tucked it away in a compartment of my sabretash I seldom used, I told the innkeeper no messenger would be required, and asked if he knew anyone named Trudeau.
Trudeau, sir?
He looked puzzled. Yes, it's a common enough name.
Surely it is, sir, I know that. It's just that I was trying to think of somebody that might be known to me, and somebody, if you understand me, sir, in your exalted position. Some armiger, anyone, I said. Anyone at all.
It would not, for example, be the name of the waiter who served us, would it?
No, sir. His name's Owen. I had a neighbor once named Trudeau, sir. But that was years ago, before I bought this place. I don't suppose it would be him you're after. Then there's my ostler here. His name's Trudeau.
I'd like to speak to him. The innkeeper nodded, his chin vanishing in the fat that circled his neck.
As you wish, sir. Not that he's likely to be able to tell you much.
The steps creaked beneath his weight.
He's from far south, I warn you.
He meant the southern regions of the city, not the wild and largely treeless lands abutting on the ice.
And from across the river to boot. You're not likely to get much sense from him, though he's a hard-working fellow.
I said, I suspect I know what part of the city he comes from.
Do you now? Well, that's interesting, sir. Very interesting. I've heard one or two say they could tell such things by the way a man dressed or how he spoke. But I wasn't aware you'd laid eyes on Trudeau, as the saying is.
We were nearing the ground now, and he bawled,
Trudeau! Trudeau!
And then?
Rains!
No one appeared. A single flagstone, the size of a large tabletop, had been laid at the foot of the stair, and we stepped out upon it. It was just at that moment when lengthening shadows ceased to be shadows at all and become instead pools of blackness, as if some fluid darker even than the waters of the Lake of Birds was rising from the ground. Hundreds of people, some alone, some in small groups, were hurrying over the grass from the direction of the city. All seemed intent, bowed by an eagerness they carried upon their backs and shoulders like a pack. Most bore no weapons, I could see, but a few had cases of rapiers, and at some distance off I made out the white blossom of an avern, carried, it seemed, on a pole or staff, just as mine was.
Pity they won't stop here, the innkeeper said. Not that I won't get some of them coming back, but a dinner before is where the money is. I speak frankly, for I can see that young as you are, sir, you're too sensible not to know that every business is run to make a profit. I try to give good value. And as I've said, we've a famous kitchen. Trudeau! I have to have one, for no other sort of food will agree with me. I'd starve, sir, if I had to eat what most do. Trudeau, you louse farm! Where are you?
A dirty boy appeared from somewhere behind the trunk, wiping his nose on his arm.
He's not back there, master.
Well, where is he? Go look for him.
I was still watching the streaming hundreds. They are all going to the sanguinary field, then? For the first time, I think, I fully realized that I was liable to die before the moon shone. Accounting for the note seemed futile and childish.
Not all to fight, you understand. Most are only going to watch. There's some come only once, because somebody they know is fighting, or just because they were told about it, or read about it, or heard a song. Usually those get taken ill because they come here and generally put away a bottle or so when they're getting over it. But there's others that come every night, or anyway 4 or 5 nights out of the week. They're specialists, and only follow one weapon, or perhaps two, and they pretend to know more about those than them that use them, which perhaps some do. After your victory, sir, 2 or 3 will want to buy you around. If you let them, they'll tell you what you did wrong and what the other man did wrong, but you'll find they don't agree.
I said, our dinner is to be private. And as I spoke, I heard the whisper of bare feet on the steps behind us. Aja and Dorcas were coming down, Aja carrying the vern, which seemed to me to have grown larger in the failing light. I have already told how strongly I desired Aja. When we are talking to women, we talk as though love and desire are two separate entities, and women, who often love us and sometimes desire us, maintain the same fiction. The fact is that they are aspects of the same thing, as I might have talked to the innkeeper of the north side of his tree and the south. If we desire a woman, we soon come to love her for her condescension in submitting to us. This, indeed, had been the original foundation of my love for Thekla. And since, if we desire her, she always submits, in imagination at least, some element of love is ever present. End of side 5. To continue, turn the cassette over.